I'm Bill Littlefield. It's time for three stories you should know.
This tournament tonight, the Nova Nation has another national championship.
Villanova has won its second men's basketball title in just 3 years, and this week we're going to start with one last March Madness story, and then we'll move on to baseball. I'm joined by the Wall Street Journal's Rachel Bachman and by Craig Calcaterra of NBC Sports. Welcome back to both of you.
Great to be here, Bill.
Hello there.
Rachel, I understand you are speculating about future NCAA tournaments and where they'll be, right?
Yes, indeed. Everybody loves San Antonio as a Final Four spot. People just absolutely raved about it there, the Riverwalk, the warm weather. So, of course, it looks like the Final Four very well might not be back there. The Alamo Dome is going up against a wave of new super stadiums that are really taking precedent in terms of big neutral site events. The college football playoff has already said, we're not going to play there. There's not enough suites and hospitality areas to entertain clients. So it's very possible that the Final Four will travel to these mega stadiums in Atlanta and Minnesota and soon in LA and not go back to the fan favorite of San Antonio.
Craig, are you dismayed by this news?
I'm mostly confused. This is college sports we're talking about, right? And my understanding is that this is amateur competition and it's all for the love of the game and the education and edification of young people. So I'm not understanding this whole need for corporate suites and sponsors and clients. Where does that come into college basketball?
This world of yours frightens and confuses me. That's your position?
You obviously have not spent much time around college sports, Craig.
Yeah, it's about the cash, obviously. Everything is about the money, especially in amateur, would-be amateur athletics these days. And as someone who lives in Columbus, Ohio, where there happens to be a college football team of note, I can tell you that the notion that there's any amateurism to this at all is rather silly, and they're not going to be going back to the Palestra in Philly, for example, which would be a wonderful place to see a college basketball championship.
Absolutely.
But such is the way of the world.
Well, the phenomenon of the arms race as it applies to buildings and facilities related to games is not new. I guess what we're seeing is just the most recent sort of supercharged manifestation of it. Or, Rachel, is there something more to this? Is it a phenomenon we haven't seen before?
I think you're right. This really is just the next step in the never-ending escalation. I do think that this will basically indicate to us what the NCAA's priorities are. Remember, this is the cash cow of the entire organization. More than 80% of the NCAA's annual revenues come from this tournament, mainly from media rights, but certainly all the rest is important too. So if it does indeed decide, and the decision will be made in the summer, not to go back to San Antonio, I think that'll be a reflection in part of the economics.
Greg, what's on your mind?
The weather. Everybody talks about the weather, but no one does anything about it.
I can't believe you said
baseball.
That.
But we should. Maybe we should, because the baseball season is underway, and it's been underway a little over a week now. And I think Thursday's games were the first set of games that didn't have at least one or two rainouts or snowouts or coldouts. A lot of people are upset about this, and a big reason for it is because the Major League Baseball season has gotten underway about a week earlier than it normally does for a number of reasons, mostly dealing with the new collective bargaining agreement. So we got going in March instead of April, and Mother Nature has wreaked havoc on us. And as this usually does occur, and I remember 2010 or 2011, we had the same sort of situation happen. There are people wondering why we don't start the season later, or why we don't start every game in a southern or domed city, or why don't they have domes in Yankee Stadium, for example? Why can't we build a retractable roof on Fenway Park, you know, sort of aftermarket retractable roof? People get crazy when the games start to get rained out early in the season. And my general take on it is, it's the weather. We always get the games in. Let's relax.
Well, I do find it funny that this is sort of like the dome's revenge, right? Because they've pretty much all but disappeared. The enclosed, multi-purpose cookie-cutter domes like the King Dome, the Astrodome, and in my hometown of Minneapolis, the Metrodome. Mm-hmm. But as we're learning, there were huge upsides to them as well, such as that you could go see a game in the snow. By the way, they're also good when it's too hot outside. When it was sweltering and humid in Minneapolis, we always knew it was going to be 70 degrees in the Metrodome.
I have long maintained that the seasons are too long, and that's easy for me to say because, unlike team owners and TV executives, my income doesn't depend on the length of the baseball season or the hockey season or whatever. But probably Kevin Kiermaier agrees with me. He's the Rays player who said that he would smear his body with Vaseline before the Rays played in New York on a 40-degree day with 20-degree wind chill factors. And he didn't do it, but he brought up a good point. And I wish he had done it, because maybe baseball would have paid attention and thought about an actual baseball season instead of maximizing profits by beginning playing when it's still winter in New England. And I'm finished, and get off my lawn.
I don't know, Craig, correct me if I'm wrong, but doesn't baseball sort of frown on players bringing Vaseline into the games?
Only if they're pitchers. Well, outfielders can do it.
Pitchers can actually use sunscreen. They have no problem with sunscreen. A lot of them use that to, they claim anyway, to make sure they get the proper grip on the ball. You know, it's one of those things that if you're doing it in secret, it's terrible. But if you're telling everyone you're doing it, it's totally fine.
All right, it's my turn, and I want to talk about this rookie that the Angels have got, although he's not really a rookie because he's played several years in Japan. Shohei Ohtani began the season very well in his first at-bat for the Angels' home opener. He hit a home run, added a couple of singles. They won the game 13-2, and he's a pitcher. Or perhaps I should say he's also a pitcher. He's the first player since 1973 to start a game as a pitcher and homer in another game as a designated hitter. And everybody knows pitchers can't hit. It's the first thing you learn about baseball. Is this guy a freak, or have we been misunderstanding baseball entirely for all these years? And are there pitchers who can hit all over the place?
I don't think it's necessarily that pitchers can't hit. It's that I would assume most teams don't want them to, because everything is geared around protecting that arm, and you don't want a guy with a 142 batting average, or even a better one, to ruin his throwing arm. One thing that's really interesting about Ohtani, if I'm right, he bats left and throws right, whereas Babe Ruth, who of course famously, about 100 years ago, did the same thing, pitched and hit, he threw and batted left. And I bring this up because I theorize, and I hope this is true, that Ohtani can sort of balance out the mechanics and maybe hang on for longer than Ruth did. Because I think Ruth only pitched and hit for about a season and a few other times. He didn't do it for his entire career.
Yeah, he became so valuable as a hitter that the Yankees wanted to use him every day. And I can see that, and I can see why somebody playing every day might not be ready to start on the mound every fifth day or whatever it might be. But this guy's no 142 hitter. I mean, he hit over 300 in the Japanese League and won 15 games a season. It is quite astonishing, I think.
I think he's a freak. He's a wonderful freak. I think the biggest question is, will Angels manager Mike Scioscia continue to give Ohtani days off? If he continues to hit, there's going to be a heavy temptation to stick him in the DH every single day that he's not pitching. And then you got to wonder what's going to happen when he pitches. Or even more so, there is a possibility of an American League manager to just forego the DH altogether and have his pitcher hit. You could do that in the American League. It's a choice. It's only been done about 5 or 6 times in the last 40 years of the DH. But Mike Scioscia could do it.
You know, you've pointed out, Craig, several good reasons to watch baseball, or at least watch the Angels this season. And I think another good reason might be just to see if one or two pitchers on every team in baseball emerges out of the bullpen and says to the manager, "Hey, you know, I hit about 450 in high school. Put me in. I can do you some good here."
There's a wonderful record of starting pitchers who think they can hit. And one is Justin Verlander of the Houston Astros, who is an atrocious hitter whenever he's had to in his career, which hasn't been very often. But he talks a big game to the press and in the locker room. He tells everyone he's a great hitter. These guys are the most deluded athletes on the planet.
My guests for this week's edition of Three Stories You Should Know have been The Wall Street Journal's Rachel Bachman and Craig Calcaterra of NBC Sports. Thanks to both of you.
Great to be here.
Thank you very much, Bill.